We've been doing a lot of firsts at this conference this year, and we're going to do another one. And we're absolutely delighted to call our next speaker, and it's the Right Honourable Teresa Villiers MP, who is the current Secretary of State here for Northern Ireland. And it gives me a profound pleasure to call the Secretary of State today to address this conference and say to you, you're extremely welcome. We're delighted you could come, and we know you've gone to some considerable inconvenience to be here, and we as a conference very much appreciate that. But you are more than welcome, and we'll come and ask you.
Thank you for that kind introduction and for that really warm welcome. It's a real pleasure to be with you here at your conference, and I'd like to start by thanking the First Minister for his kind invitation to address you this afternoon. In my speech, I'm proposing to cover four themes. I'll emphasise the government's overriding commitment to keeping people here safe and secure. I'll set out some of the things we're doing to help Northern Ireland through these very difficult economic times and to help you rebalance the economy. I'll reiterate the importance we attach to building a genuinely shared future for all in Northern Ireland. And I'll underline the importance that my party and the government attach to the future of our United Kingdom. So, turning first to security matters. Just over 3 weeks ago, Northern Ireland witnessed a despicable and cowardly attack which left a prison officer dead and his family devastated. And I very much welcome the swift and resolute condemnation of that atrocity from right across the community here and from the rest of the UK and from the Republic of Ireland and from the United States. Whilst no words of ours can ever make up for the loss David Black's family suffered, it is right that all of us demonstrate a united and resolute determination that the evil people responsible for his murder will never succeed in their aims. The future of Northern Ireland will only ever be decided by democracy and by consent, and never by terrorist violence. And of course, I say those words mindful of the fact that we meet here today at the venue of one of the most appalling and savage acts of the Troubles. And the murder of David Black provides a tragic illustration of the threat that the so-called dissidents still pose. They might be small in number, they have virtually no popular or political support, but they have the capability to inflict violence, and they possess lethal intent. And so continuing vigilance is absolutely essential. And I want today to pay the strongest possible tribute to the men and women of the Police Service of Northern Ireland and to the officers of the Prison Service. They serve this community without fear or favour and with the utmost dedication and professionalism. And as Peter rightly said, an attack on them is an attack on all of us. And it is worth emphasising that the PSNI is probably the most scrutinised and accountable police service in Western Europe. They do a fantastic job, and they have the government's complete backing. It's in large part down to their efforts that almost every one of the attacks planned by terrorists is thwarted, and they do a fantastic job. So on coming to power, this government endorsed an additional 50 million for policing here. In our national security strategy, we made tackling Northern Ireland-related terrorism a tier one priority. And despite these times of austerity, we secured an exceptional additional 200 million over 4 years from the Treasury. As I said in the debate sponsored by your MPs in Parliament this week on these grave matters, the government will continue to do everything we can to keep the people of Northern Ireland safe from the terrorist threat. And I should also emphasise that vital assistance in this task is provided by the Gardaí Corner of the Republic of Ireland. Cooperation between the PSNI and the AGS has never been closer than it is now, and it continues to save lives. So when praising Matt Baggett and his offices of the PSNI, I'd also like to thank Commissioner Callanan and his offices in the AGS for all they do in the joint fight against terrorism. Their contribution and their efforts are crucial. Indeed, it's worth noticing that across the board, relations between the UK and the Republic of Ireland are probably better than they ever have been. And your decision to invite a member of the Irish government to your conference is a further illustration of just how much has changed in Northern Ireland over recent years. As is widely accepted, though, terrorism is never going to be defeated by security measures alone, crucial though such measures are. As well as bearing down on the terror threat through an effective security response, we also need to develop the Northern Ireland economy, tackle the causes of division, and demonstrate clearly that the political institutions here are delivering. And I've promised to work closely with the executive in pursuit of all those objectives. So let me set out this government's approach to the economy first. When we came to power in May 2010, we inherited the largest structural deficit in our peacetime history. Our deficit was the highest of any major developed economy. To put it bluntly, this country was on the brink of bankruptcy. As a result, we were being forced to borrow around 200,000 a minute to pay and pay over 120 million a day in interest on the debts left to us by our Labour predecessors. And so when the coalition government was formed, our overriding priority was to rescue the economy by repairing the public finances and ensuring that this country lives within its means once again. And our Labour opponents argue that we should deal with the deficit at a slower pace, or even that we should borrow more to spend more. Well, I don't know about you, but as far as I can see, it only takes simple common sense to understand that you don't solve a debt crisis by creating more debt. Not only would Labour's approach inflict deep and lasting economic damage, it would also be morally wrong to laden future generations with an ever larger legacy of debt. And when Labour advocate large cuts in VAT, they have a duty to tell us where they would find the additional $15 billion that would cost. They have not done so. But there's no doubt that we've had to make many hard choices since coming to office, nor is there any doubt that our economy has been severely hampered by the ongoing crisis in the Eurozone. Yet 2.5 years on, we've reduced Labour's deficit by a quarter and gained the confidence of the international markets. That's kept interest rates low, which is crucial for everyone who runs a business or who pays a mortgage, whether it's Northern Ireland or right across the whole of the UK. To help business, we've cut the UK's rate of corporation tax. By the end of this Parliament, our corporate tax rates will be the lowest of any major developed economy. And we're setting up the funding for lending scheme to help businesses right across businesses access much-needed finance to get investment flowing again. And I'm keen to work closely with Sammy to ensure that Northern Ireland gains the full benefit of these and other schemes to get the banks lending to business again. And now at last, we're seeing the first tentative signs that our economy is healing. Across the UK, the economy is growing and unemployment is falling. And let me say that we've been helped in our efforts to fix the economy by the fact that this country decided to stay out of the euro and keep its own currency. And back in the 1990s, when I was campaigning against UK membership of the euro, people told me I was fighting a losing battle. They said scrapping our currency was inevitable as the next stage of European integration. And they said, if you remember, that the euro was the passport to economic stability and prosperity. Well, how hollow those claims have turned out to be. And parties like the Conservatives and the DUP should be proud of the fact that we were in the forefront of the campaign to keep our currency and defend our sovereignty from encroachment from Brussels. But turning back to the present, no one underestimates the scale of the economic challenges facing us here in Northern Ireland. In particular, we're too dependent on public spending, even more so than at the time of the Belfast Agreement in 1998. So I share the determination of the executive to rebalance the economy and boost the private sector. Many of the responsibilities rest with local ministers, with Peter, with Sammy and Arlene in particular, and I pay tribute to the great work that they do to promote Northern Ireland in the intensely competitive global race for jobs and investment. And for its size, Northern Ireland is the best performing region in the UK when it comes to direct foreign investment, with striking success, for example, in the financial services technology sector. But in some respects, we still do lag behind the Republic of Ireland. So the government's been looking very hard at the case for devolving corporation tax to the executive to enable Northern Ireland to become even more competitive than it is now. The ministerial working group set up to examine this has completed its work, and a report has gone to the Prime Minister. As he said during his very successful visit earlier this week, he's now considering that report, and he'll respond to it in due course. But whatever the outcome on corporation tax devolution, this government is determined with the executive to present a modern, forward-looking Northern Ireland that's a great place for investment. That's what we'll be doing next year when County Fermanagh hosts the G8 summit, which brings together the leaders of 8 of the world's most powerful economies. This will showcase Northern Ireland as an inspirational setting for world leaders to discuss ambitious solutions to pressing global problems. It will demonstrate what an excellent location Northern Ireland is to visit and to do business in, and it will highlight the growing confidence that exists in this part of the United Kingdom. I believe that it will be a tremendous success for Northern Ireland, and I thank you for the resounding welcome that you gave the announcement on this last week. Another area in which we can highlight a modern, forward-looking Northern Ireland is in efforts to tackle sectarianism and build a genuinely shared society. For all the progress that's been made in recent years, the economic and social costs of division remain too high. But there's another dimension too. It also helps to feed the discontent on which dissidents will always seek to prey and recruit. So tackling it is a key priority. And of course, most of the policy areas here are rightly devolved. But where you take the tough decisions needed to make progress, you'll have the enthusiastic backing of the government. As the Prime Minister so memorably put it in his speech to the Assembly last year, Northern Ireland needs a shared future, not a shared out future. We need to build a cohesive and united Northern Ireland for everyone, regardless of their community background. And I know that's a vision that's shared by the First Minister and by your party, as set out in Peter's speech to you earlier today. We meet today with Northern Ireland enjoying unprecedented political stability. So much has been achieved over the years. The great constitutional issues have been settled on the basis of consent. The only way that Northern Ireland's position within the United Kingdom will ever change is if that's what the people of Northern Ireland decide that they want. That's at the heart of the political agreements, and we will always stand by them. But along with the Prime Minister, I am clear on my support for the United Kingdom. We will never be neutral on the Union. That goes for Northern Ireland and for Scotland too. We believe that England, Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland are stronger together, weaker apart. As a united kingdom, we have together achieved a huge amount. We are a major player on the world stage, not least through the Commonwealth, the G8 and our permanent seat on the UN Security Council. But in the Scottish referendum that's coming up, the case for keeping Scotland in the United Kingdom won't be won by appealing to history. We will prevail by presenting a vision of a modern, inclusive, and forward-looking United Kingdom that respects the diversity and identity of each of its constituent parts, but also enables us to come together as one nation, as we did with such tremendous success at the Olympics this year. That is the message, ladies and gentlemen, that we'll be putting forward alongside those from all parties and of none who believe that we are indeed better together. Thank you.
Give the Secretary of State another round of applause. Yes, Lee.